it's time for the simple life. Ooh, go get your butt off of that lazy couch. Put down a laptop and get out of that house. Don't need no nothing, all I need is time for the simple life.
Welcome to Simple Life Radio, stories for the adventurous at heart. I'm your host, Cynthia Fernandez, and for this hour, we're going to focus on all the real life experiences and perspectives of our guest in studio from the Central Coast of California. This show was actually born from the love of story, storytelling, and a desire for a deeper connection between all living things, one person at a time. I want to send out a great big thank you to all those listeners and especially callers from last Saturday. Truth be told, when my guest didn't show up, I was completely unprepared and I didn't really have a plan. So to have folks call in was much appreciated. The comments shared by the callers were so encouraging too. And I just want to say that from time to time, I think I will use that format again, only be a little more prepared in the future. Last week's show and many other archive shows are now available to listen to as MP3 podcasts at simpleliferadio.podbean.com. If you're a Facebook user, please use the Simple Life Radio page, and there will be a post there with the podcast. You can just click right in and listen to the feed. We talked last week about people and ideas that were out of the box. Environmental issues and sustainable choices. Well, we're going to continue that topic with today's guest. Michael Calabrese is a local born and raised. I met Michael as a result of word of mouth advertising for his hairstyling skills. I have long hair and it's very hard to find a good stylist. He's an incredible stylist, so if anybody wants to know how to get a hold of him, we'll mention that at the end. But I invited him on the show today because in his personal experience, he has incredible passion for living close to the land and really living well and in harmony with the environment. Michael is an amazing stylist, as I mentioned, and I think he's going to amaze you with his honest-to-goodness know-how with food, homegrown style, and family roots. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you for having me.
I'm so glad you're here. This is going to be fun.
I'm glad you asked me to be here.
Yay! Well, you know, I mentioned that you were born and raised here. What was the area like when you were little? And what area, actually, were you growing up in?
In Spaghetti Hill. My grandmother lived off of Sino Street, and they had an acre of land and fruit trees. And my grandfather was a fisherman, as well as the rest of the men in the family at that time. And they would put up a table through the whole yard with white tablecloths and bring in food, and people would come, and it was a great adventure growing up because you never knew what was going to happen.
Yeah. Sounds like it was a big group.
It was. My mom is one of four girls, and so there was 15 of us first cousins. We all hung out together. Sundays we'd eat at Nana's house, spaghetti, and we'd go to the show, the State Theater, downtown Monterey. We'd stop at Hellum's and get some candy before we went in.
How fun.
And then we'd go back to Nana's and have our meal, and everybody enjoyed everyone's company. And we'd play in the yard. We'd get in trouble, of course, and playing in the gully, getting wet.
That's back when kids actually played outside.
Yeah. They want to get out, go play outside.
Yeah. And so is that a weekend sort of routine or a...
Every Sunday was dinner at Nana's house. Uh-huh. And but all his cousins played together as well. We would, they were backed up to the Presidio, so they had the White Eagle. We'd go through the gully, go play at the Presidio, go down to the wharf. There was a shortcut at the bottom of Sino Street, and we'd get to the wharf. I had cousins and uncles, and people had fish markets, and we'd go crabbing off the wharf, fishing off the wharf, and just kind of running around and exploring our neighborhood.
Yeah, it sounds very free.
It was free. And we'd sneak off to Troya's Market, which was across the street, sawdust on the floors, salamis hanging, prosciutto. I mean, and it smelled like a real...
Deli?
Yeah, like a real one. It was great. And then, of course, the Troya's moved when urban renewal came in and they put that road. That road, Del Monte didn't come all the way up to Pacific. That was a dead end, and it went through the plaza before the plaza was there, and downtown was alive. Every weekend, everybody was downtown. That's where you hung out.
So it was a gathering place.
Yeah, you went to the show. People went to JCPenney's. I mean, they had Sprouts Ritz. All of the, before Del Monte Shopping Center came,
okay,
everything was downtown Monterey.
Right. So like where we now have Farmers Market on Tuesday in Alvarado, Franklin area, that was downtown.
Downtown Monterey, and it connected with the wharf. And so we had our bikes. We were back and forth to everywhere as fast as we could go, you know.
So it was really safe and fairly uncrowded?
Absolutely. It wasn't so safe, though, because if you did something wrong, nobody had a problem spanking your butt. Before you got home, your mother knew what you already did, because everybody knew everybody.
So everybody was an auntie or an uncle to any of the kids.
Yeah, and Sundays, all you smelled was onions and garlic and sauce cooking, because everybody had spaghetti Sundays.
Oh, so food was a big deal.
Food was always a big deal.
Yeah.
And plentiful, you know. I remember clamming on Monterey Beach. We'd get beautiful big clams there, crabbing off of the wharf. And, of course, the abalone, we would go. We were too little, but our uncles, my dad and uncles, would go in the water off of Sylmar and get, you know, sacks of abalone, mostly for Christmas time and the holidays.
A special holiday.
Special things, yeah. And sea urchins. They liked sea. I don't like sea urchins so much, but they do.
Yeah, I'm not a sea urchin fan.
But they seem to like them a lot. And so she had a big lemon tree in her yard, my grandma. And so sacks of sea urchin, loaves of bread, and people would just come. And people brought whatever. Nobody was ever outed. Everybody came. Everybody was welcome.
They all pitched in.
They all pitched in with whatever they had.
Uh-huh. Like stone soup.
Yeah, and it was enough always for everyone.
Uh-huh. Wow, that sounds so awesome. And you know, Michael, listening to you describe all the fishing off of the coast here in Monterey reminds me that I haven't seen anybody fishing off the coast in Monterey. I mean, I know nowadays we're very aware of preservation and conservation, and I think that's important. But I also, in the back of my mind, remember that even though Monterey Bay is a world-class marine sanctuary, it is also suffering from toxic waste in terms of, you know, I see signs that say don't eat the mussels and don't collect things and eat them. I wonder what changed. Maybe population?
I think population and the abundance of waste that goes down our drains. And you know, they talk about, well, you have all these raccoons and stuff. Well, they're living in the storm drains, and that waste gets all washed out to sea, and people, you know, throwing stuff down there, and the amount of people that are now on the peninsula.
Yeah, there are a lot more people nowadays. So you've seen lots of changes through the years.
Yeah, tremendous amount.
And most of those changes, would you say, were they developmental, you know, just actually big businesses and buildings going in?
Yes. I think it all kind of, for me at least, what I noticed because I was little, was urban renewal came in and started tearing down, buying people's homes and this and that and tearing them down. And they might not have built anything for many, many, many years, but they started this whole change. And then Del Monte Shopping Center came in, which that kind of took people away from downtown Monterey.
It's true.
But it was a walking distance downtown from everybody that lived up on the hill. Everybody walked down the movie theaters on Sundays where all the kids were there. They showed cartoons before the movies and, you know, everybody hung out. Yeah. And then parents would walk up and down. We'd go for walks with everybody at night in the evenings. Kind of like in Europe, how they have their walking time at night after dinners.
Well, that happens in Carmel nowadays. I mean, there are a lot of conveniences to living in the village of Carmel.
Yes.
You can walk to the bakery or the, you know, the coffee shop or the post office or whatever.
And there used to be more of those businesses downtown prior to Del Monte Shopping Center coming in.
Yeah.
So people could walk to the cave. Here's 25 cents. Run to Troyer's and get a loaf of bread, or, you know. And it didn't take very long to get there and back.
Do you mind my asking what year this was?
Oh, my God. It was late 50s, early 60s. Uh-huh. I was born in 56, so it was probably like early 60s, 61, 62.
And I think what you're describing might actually be similar to other locations during that time frame.
Yeah, I think a lot had started to change around then. Lifestyles, more people had cars and traveled a little bit more. Our outings were Big Sur. We went camping in Big Sur, the whole family. We'd caravan down, get everybody's camp together, and
get out that
side,
white tablecloth.
The tablecloths, and they'd set up ropes with blankets hanging. That was our walls to enclose our campsites. And then we had all these little gadgets. My dad had a big square can, and that he soldered on a faucet to it. And he put it on the back end of the fireplace that they had in Big Sur. They were made out of river rock. And so it would heat up the water. We'd have hot water for dishes.
Oh, what a smart man.
Yeah, so everything was a little bit more convenient that
way.
Yes,
yes. Well, you can live simply and still have creature comforts.
Absolutely. I do to this day.
I know you do. And I want to talk about some of those creature comforts. So, Michael, aside from your having a wonderful hair salon available here in Monterey, Park Avenue Salon, folks, if you really want a good haircut, let me know. Actually, I'm going to give you the number right now just so you can jot it down. Park Avenue Salon is 831-375-1366. And Michael explains that that's his way of making money so that he can run his little small urban farm.
Yep.
So tell us about your urban farm.
Well, I moved out there in 81, and I live up on top of Lorellis Grade, and so... having grown up with fresh garden foods from my grandmother, go get some parsley, go get this, go get that. And so we did, and they had fruit trees. And so I wanted to have that same experience, you know, living with good fresh food, fresh parsley and garlic and onions.
There's nothing like it.
No, and now in the winter times, we're lucky we live in such an area that we can have a garden all year round. My favorite one is the winter garden because you have all your greens, your kale, your broccoli, chard, kale, and just having that in your backyard, going out and picking some. Friends would come over for dinner. Come on, we're going to go out and pick dinner. They're like, what? So we'd go outside, pick a bunch of things, come back in, wash, prepare them. And that was the fun of it, of sitting around, cleaning your food, preparing it, and then eating it. And they were just amazed that all this just came from the backyard, you know.
Well, and some of the best conversation happens when,
in the kitchen.
Yes, when hands are busy.
Why are you doing that? What's going in? How come? Because it tastes good that way.
Well, I want to talk more about what kinds of animals you have at your farm, but we're going to take a short break. Please stay with us. We're at KRXA 540 AM, and you're listening to Simple Life. We're back in studio with Michael Calabrese of Park Avenue Salon, and we are talking not about haircutting, but about his small urban farm. So you said your favorite was growing a winter garden.
All the greens that...
That you can use through the winter. And
yeah.
Isn't that fabulous? In this climate, you can have fresh picked... I mean, it's great to go to farmer's market, but wouldn't it be awesome to go out the back door?
Yeah, it is.
And just have what you need and then supplement with farmer's market. So in addition to your vegetables, what else do you have there?
I am raising pheasants and I have chickens. And so I get the eggs and hatch them in the incubator and raise them up and then butcher them and process them, put them in the freezer.
So unlike most of us, you know what kind of meat you're eating. I see a lot of ads on Facebook and whatnot about, you know, labeling GMO. And I just think, gosh, if we grow it ourselves or we know someone who's growing it, we know it's raised humanely, it's local, so we're not creating more carbon in the atmosphere. And we don't even have to worry about labeling GMOs. I mean, let's just get back to basics.
No, and we know what they're eating. And,
yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. And is this a fairly large scale production?
No, not really. I mean, I will probably butcher 20 pheasants a year and make pheasant rolls. My friend Julie's husband taught me how to make these pheasant rolls. So my friend Susie and her husband JJ were every weekend getting together, cooking something. JJ's the barbecue guy. We just hand him the meat. Here, go do it. Susie is incredible. She's right there beside me. Today, we just jarred seven jars of Asian pears that we picked from my tree just before I got here. And then we've been doing tomato sauce. So this is the time for tomatoes. My friend Monique found me a bunch of heirloom tomatoes from Carmel Valley, and we processed them. And my mom came over, my sister, we all just got together and processed these tomatoes. When I was little, our whole family would go to Salinas, bring the farmer a fish. After they pick the fields, they'd let us go through.
So you kind of glean whatever was left.
Yeah, and we just fill the trucks up, go back to my grandmother's, and it was a week-long process. All four families had enough sauce for the year.
Okay.
Because typically in Sicilian families, you have sauce on Thursdays and Sundays.
Okay.
Or spaghetti
nights. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Wow.
So it's a little bit of a process, but it goes by. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
You know, and who's chopping tomatoes? You get to converse and enjoy when each other's companies. And at the end of the day, you got a bunch of nice jars of tomato sauce.
Well, you know, nowadays the quantum physicists would say that those jars of canned tomatoes and pears and whatnot have better vibration because the people who put them together were feeling really good.
They were made with
love. And
yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
And you've continued in the tradition that your Nana started.
Absolutely. I give them to my aunts, you know, here and there, little gifts and it reminds me of Nana, you know.
Yeah.
And so everybody enjoys it too, and it tastes unbelievably delicious.
So you're describing a number of days in a project canning tomato sauce. What do you say to people who work 5 days a week or?
Stop.
Yeah. Now, I should mention at this point that Michael works, 4 days a week. Is that?
At 3.5.
3.5 days a week. And when I say you work 3.5 days a week, you work outside of the home 3.5 days a week.
Yeah, I work long hours Tuesday, Wednesdays, and Thursdays, and then half day on Friday. But then that gives me enough time to get all my things done at home, starting seedlings and working the garden. And I have horses, I have chickens, I have pheasants, as I said before. And I still want to enjoy life.
Absolutely.
I think we've gotten into the thing that Monday through Friday 8 to 5 is a little overwhelming sometimes. You don't have enough home time, downtime to be with one another, to enjoy your yard, enjoy your city, your beaches. I mean, we live in one of the most beautiful places in the world. And how many people really get to get out and enjoying it as they're driving to work? Oh, look at the beach, looks beautiful. No, I want to go take a walk on the beach. Want to enjoy where we live.
Absolutely. And you know, we're known for being one of the most expensive real estate areas in the world, and it just seems like such a shame that people have this great area, like you say,
right in their backyard,
and really are only focused on making that mortgage payment. But you know, that's why we have this radio show. It's Simple Life. We just bring up alternative ideas about how things can be. And you, Michael, are a testimony to how things can be. So you've made this choice for yourself to balance your time at home and your time away from home. And the time that you spend at home, it sounds like you're not really napping.
No.
You stay pretty busy.
When I wake up, I'm hit the ground running.
Yeah.
And taking care of my animals, my yard. I also have ornamental flowers and plants and things. But my garden, and anybody can have a garden. You know what? You get out there, you plant the seeds. I'm still learning. I learn every day. This year I planted tomatoes from seed. I should have started them in a greenhouse. My tomatoes are just now starting to ripen. So had I had a jump on it, like people did with greenhouses, my friend in Watsonville, he already had large harvests of tomatoes because he started them much earlier than me.
How early? I'm curious.
Like a month or two early, because in the greenhouse, I did mine outside, so because we had such a cold spring, they weren't sprouting.
Right.
And I kept waiting and looking at that dirt, kept watering it. I was like, come on, I know you're in there. And finally, they kept popping through. Susie'd come over, go running over and look. I go, no, nothing yet.
Yeah.
And then finally, they started coming through. And then when they got a couple inches high, I transplanted them into the ground. I planted like 60 different plants of tomatoes.
Okay.
And so now we're just now, I just did a batch last week. One milk crate does 6 jars of tomato sauce.
Oh, you've got that down.
I just figured that out.
That's amazing.
So now as I pick, I know I have to have one crate.
Yes.
In order to make
one batch.
Yeah.
And when you say 6 jars, you mean quarts.
Yes.
Not pints.
No, quarts.
Quarts.
Yeah.
And then are you actually able to live off of what you produce on your little farm?
Kind of pretty much for the most part. I have to go get my other meats, and farmer's market has, you know, I do have carrots sometimes, but when I don't, I'll go down there. Onions. I planted onions last year. We didn't have a really good winter, and normally it would supply me with onions for quite a while. So now I let them go to seed, and hopefully this year we'll get a pretty good rain, and those onions will come up again. With the seeds that I've thrown out there, and garlic.
Mm-hmm.
And that way, even like with winter squash, I did acorn squash and butternut squash. Put those in a basket in the garage. They last all summer long, all through the
really?
Winter and summer. Yeah.
That's lovely. So do you mingle different growing vegetables and spices together? I know in permaculture there's the Three Sisters is an example of compatibility.
Yes. I just learned that a few years ago, and after my stallion passed away, I at the bottom of his corral, I did that Three Sisters. It's corn, beans, and squash, and they all eat different
nutrients
so they complement one another.
Yeah.
The squash shades the dirt so it stays moist. The corn grows, and the beans grow up the corn as their pole.
Absolutely.
And the Mayans, I think, used to do that.
Yes, Mayans, yeah.
I mean, what an incredible thing right there. You got one patch, and you could do it like the Wizard of Oz circle, Dorothy's started in a big circle,
yes.
So you could walk through it.
Oh, fun.
And pick as you go, because beans, of course, come all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
You keep picking up the stalk.
Yeah. And that's in full sun. Full sun. Yeah. And there's also, I don't know if you know this, but in sacred geometry, which is older than the hills, there is an advantage to planting in a spiral. You mentioned Dorothy and the Wizard of Oz.
Yeah.
But actually a spiral, I remember touring In Cusco, in South America, I toured with a woman who had a retreat center. And when she was from California, she took over there lots of little plants and things from California to grow. And they didn't do very well because it's a different climate.
Right.
So she started to plant them in a spiral. And they actually got better. And it was so common that the local people who worked with and for her would call the spiral the hospital. Because when they would plant them in the spiral, they would just get better. So you've got a good idea there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And do you have bees?
I had bees, and I think I had them in the wrong spot. Hemlock grew there, and hemlock is poisonous to most things. And when it flowered, they left.
Yeah.
But they were the most fun things to have. I would go open the box every morning and have coffee with them.
Wait. Don't they sting you?
No. They're so sweet. Bees are not what people think. Oh, get away from that bee. It's going to sting you. No. They're so docile. These were Italian bees, too.
Oh, well, that's why.
There we go. And so I'd lift it up. I'd check out how the hive was going, because I had bought an original bunch, and then they have to build up their colony.
Oh.
And so then they build up their honey, and the first box is all theirs. That's what they eat. And then you put a queen separator so she can't get through to lay eggs in the cells. And the next box is yours. And so whenever I needed honey, I would just go out, pick out a...
out of your box.
Out of, and pick out a slant and bring it to the house get the spatula, and out comes this liquid gold. It was beautiful and delicious.
Now, I read something the other day that said honey is like the only food that will never go bad.
Yeah, it stays.
It is naturally preserved. Don't quote me on this, but I think it said 3,000 years. I mean, that's a really long time.
Well, nature makes things perfect.
Yeah.
People are the ones who don't make things perfect.
Well, we have more to learn from nature.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Follow nature.
Right.
Nature was what gave us the guidelines in the beginning. We've just kind of deferred from it a little bit.
Yeah, I think so. So do you get heckled by friends who see you out on your back 40? I mean, I don't know how many acres or whatever, but busy 4 days a week, 4.5 days a week on the farm?
No, because I have friends that come and they want to come and help and pitch in. And I have other friends that do this at their homes as well.
Uh-huh.
And so sometimes we'll trade vegetables. My friend Stan did a gagutsi trompetta, a trumpet zucchini, which is long, like 2-3 feet long.
And that's not a gourd?
No, it's a zucchini, Italian zucchini, and it has an artichoke flavor. So you peel the skin and cut off 1-inch wheels, and they're beautiful too. A picture of that with the little seeds on the inside is a beautiful picture. But they taste like an artichoke. And so when you saute that with your onions and garlic and olive oil and either put a sauce or put it over pasta, it's delicious.
And you were telling me one the other day, what is it, zucchini longhi?
Oh, gugutsi lunghi.
Oh, that's it.
they look like a bat. They are huge, like 3 or 4 feet long and fat. And one of my clients brought in some greens from that, and they're very velvety, and there's a Sicilian dish that you call tenderumi. It's a soupy pasta dish, and you use the greens. And this was the summertime that this happens. So summertime, we don't have too many greens in the garden, so this is a nice substitute for the winter greens.
Ah.
And it's just a nice little soupy thing with your onions and garlic, and throw it in these leaves all chopped up, and it's some pasta afterwards. It's delicious. A little olive oil, some cheese. It's really a nutritious and delicious meal all in one bowl, kind of.
Have you thought of having a restaurant?
And that's too much work. It would be, this is what we're having tonight, so don't ask for anything else.
Well, you know there are those kinds of restaurants. You know, where you go and there's the chef special and that's it.
And that's it.
Yeah, I think there's actually one in downtown Carmel.
In La Boheme.
Ah, that's it. Yes.
Yeah.
And they don't seem to have trouble getting people in the door.
Not at all. I think there's a waiting list.
Yeah. Well, you're making me hungry. So do you pretty much stay at home? You can't leave the farm?
No, I go. I have friends that house sit for me and take care of the animals. And if I want to go riding, I trailer the horses down to Garland Park or the beach, whatever. And yeah, no, I still get to have a life. I am tied down a lot, but I like it. I like being
at
home. I like where I live. It's in the sun. My family comes over. Friends come over. And we barbecue. Have a pizza oven. That has been a lot of fun.
Now, is it one of those Cobb?
Yes.
Yeah. So for those of you who don't know what Cobb is, when I first heard Cobb, I imagined corn cobs all stacked neatly together. But in fact, Cobb building is actually it's inclusive of mud and straw. And what's the other one, Michael? There's mud and straw. So like the typical adobe, that was the adobe.
Yeah, but this is a fire brick oven.
Okay.
In a dome style. And so I had a family reunion and some holidays, and all my family comes over, and we bought a bunch of round doughs, and everybody got to make their own pizza. And so the kids went nuts. They had a ball with it. Look at this. And flour everywhere. Everybody was making a mess, but it was fun.
Yes.
And outside. And they cook in like 2 to 3 minutes.
Oh, wow.
So everybody's all, well, look at mine. Here, taste this, taste that. So a lot of fun. And then we sat down and ate.
Yeah.
After we made 8 pizza for hours.
Oh, my goodness.
So we had all our antipasto outside. And then later on, we had our spaghetti and chicken and salad and all that stuff.
Any plans for a vineyard?
I do have some grapes around the arbor, around the patio. And I do have a few plants of wine grapes that I need to find a place to plant them. I just can't, and I have olive trees too. I just bought. I want to plant because I want to learn how to cure olives.
Oh, wouldn't that be nice?
That was another thing that my grandparents did. They had, you know, they traded a lot back in the day. Whatever they, you know, the ranch people would come to the coast, and the fishermen would trade fish for whatever they were growing over there, like the red bell peppers.
Sure.
Because my nana would roast those and jar those. So when holidays or people came over, you get bread and the garlic and the olive oil and get the peppers out. And, you know, she always had like a little antipasto that she could just whip out of the refrigerator or out of the pantry. But they would trade. They would barter.
Yeah.
And it was wonderful. They love the fish because they're inland. They don't get that all the time. And we like the produce that we could get from inland. You know, it's hotter. They grow hotter. Like peppers need more heat. Tomatoes need more heat. So they would barter for that.
Yeah. Well, and you're speaking about a very simple way of living.
Yeah, it is.
You know, I mean, it might seem complicated to those of us who are accustomed to going to Safeway or whatever. But it is a very simple way of living because it's whatever you make it.
And it's easy to do. If you just plant some things out in the yard, and it's a hit and miss, they might not like it in that spot. Move them over there, water them, and then you could go out, pick off the side leaves of whatever greens you're growing or whatever. Even broccoli leaves are delicious.
Oh, yes, they
are. Cauliflower leaves are delicious. They taste like...
the plant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And sautéing all that in a frying pan and throwing that over some pasta with some olive oil and some nice Parmesan cheese is a meal in itself.
That's so true. And there's a special feeling about just having it right there.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not actually a very good gardener, but I am learning. And we live in Carmel Valley, and so I try to have some amount of vegetables and certainly spices in the yard in our fenced-in area. And just sending Bella out to get, you know, green onions. People don't realize if you buy organic green onions, they come with the little white roots on the end. If you use that green onion down to maybe an inch from the root and then walk out your back door, put it in your flower garden, it comes up and you have fresh
another
green
onion.
Onions.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't need to buy very many green onions.
I've done that with butter lettuce from Costco.
Oh, right.
They came in a packet with the roots.
With the roots.
Cut, leave a little bit on the top and plant those, and you got a head of lettuce growing.
I mean, you bought it and paid for it.
Absolutely.
So it's yours. If you want to throw it away or plant it and give it more life, that's great too.
A lot of things are like that too, where you could take them in potatoes.
Oh, absolutely.
Bury those, and when the greens come up and they flower, they're ready to go.
You know what I do is I have a dark place under my counter for potatoes, and the time that it takes me to get to the potatoes, sometimes they're starting to grow, and that's what determines which ones get planted in the yard. And the same with onions, right? What we call dry onions.
Yes.
When they start growing, you can just put them in, but if you do that, they're going to go to seed. Is that right?
Yeah, they'll go to seed. But then you've got a whole handful of little seeds that are all going to be in onions.
Onion seeds. Mm-hmm. And if you, let's see. So there's a long, hard tuber stalk that goes up.
With a ball
maybe
of flour.
Maybe 4 or 5
top.
Feet. Mm-hmm. And it has a ball. Looks like fireworks that's been frozen in time.
It does.
And do you just cut off that ball once the seeds turn black on it?
No, I just kind of let them stay there, and then I'll go and I'll see if they're dry.
Okay.
Because they do need to dry. And then just kind of crumple it in my hand with my other hand underneath, catching the seeds.
Catch the seeds. And then it's okay to plant those anytime, or is there a good time to plant onions?
Around here, anytime. And I try and keep, sometimes I'll buy starters and I'll start get those in the ground, because then I know for sure in a month or two I'm going to have some smaller onions to use in salads or whatever, and the greens as well are also good because they're fresh from your garden. You could put those in sauces and roasts and stuff. Just everything goes in the pan. You don't really waste much when it's fresh from the garden.
Well,
there's not
much
waste.
There you go. We're listening to Michael Calabrese talk about his garden. This is KRXA 540 AM, and you're listening to Simple Life. We'll be right back. We're We're back in the station here with Michael Calabrese of Park Avenue Salon, and we're having a grand time talking about simple living. So, Michael, before we went to break, I kept thinking in my mind's eye, you know, I live in Carmel Valley. I have gopher problems. What about you?
I have huge gopher problems, but I built raised beds with wire underneath. Not chicken wire, a little heavier duty wire.
Like Avery wire?
Yes. That'll last a little bit longer than chicken wire.
How long?
Quite a few years longer than chicken wire will rot.
Like 3 years, I think.
Yeah. Chicken wire doesn't land. Gophers will chew right through that. It's thinner.
Isn't it amazing what the little guys can do?
Those little boogers, I tell you, they
go
after everything.
I just wish they'd leave a little left for me. So, Avery wire, and then do you use raised garden boxes?
For most things, and sometimes I'll put baskets in the ground for some of my tomatoes are. But funny, some things they don't bother. I have these... they're called honey boats, and they're like an acorn squash or a butternut squash, and they're Italian, and they don't bother them, nor do they bother the butternut squash. So some things they don't really care
for.
Well,
I know they don't like rosemary, and where I'm at, I have drugged this little dwarf apple tree around with me 3 moves, and I promised it if it survived this last one, I wouldn't take it anywhere. But at the same time, knowing how much gopher activity there was, I planted rosemary like on 3 corners around this apple tree. And so far, I mean, where I live, the gophers took out a guava tree.
Oh, yeah, they'll take a full grown tree down.
I can't grow corn. I mean, it just disappears before it even gets mature. And I think they don't like garlic.
No, they don't. Garlic or onions.
Yeah, so for anybody listening, if you have gopher problems, just go ahead and buy a bulb of garlic at the grocery store, break it apart into the little clove pieces, and shove those guys down root first into the ground. Anywhere you put them, 9 times out of 10, it's going to come up.
Oh, yeah.
And the roots that go down, when those gophers go around eating their way through the underground, they're going to stumble across some hot garlic.
They're not going to like it. They're not Italian.
No, what about spaghetti squash? I love spaghetti squash. I want to grow it.
That's a fun one, too, because you can put any kind of sauce on it you want.
Absolutely.
In fact, I have some right now in the garden.
Oh, my gosh. I just came across this paleo recipe for pesto spaghetti squash, and it's so simple. I mean, pesto takes 5 minutes with a food processor, and then you basically just put it in your cooked spaghetti squash and add some fresh cut-up tomatoes, which are thankfully still in season.
I have ice cube trays specifically for pesto. My friend Susie brought some over, and she made a couple of trays. So, and then we bought a bunch, and we spend a couple hours just washing and cleaning, putting it through the cuisine art with some olive oil, some salt, and threw it in the and garlic, voila. And threw it in the trays. And once they're frozen, you pop them into a Ziploc bag, and you've got a nice little ice cube of pesto.
Oh, that's such a great idea. So, what do you use pesto on?
One of my favorites is a pasta with cauliflower and pesto.
Pasta, cauliflower, and pesto.
So you cook your cauliflower in the water that you're going to be boiling your pasta with. And once it's sort of cooked, take it out, chop it up, throw it into the frying pan with some olive oil and the couple of cubes of pesto.
Yeah.
And saute that up a little bit and throw that over pasta with some cheese. And I like a pecorino romano.
Oh, you do?
I do, and that's one of my favorite. Because a goat cheese or a sheep cheese is for lactose intolerant people.
I did not know that.
People who, I can't have cheese. Nuh-uh, bull. You can have any kind of cheese you want. It just has to be from a goat or a sheep and not a cow.
Because the casein is different, right?
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
And I think I met a man at a wedding in Big Sur, and he has goats at Palo, Colorado, and he makes Parmesan cheese, he makes the feta cheese, he makes all of those wonderful cheeses from goat's milk.
Well, you certainly can. It's one of my favorites. Paul doesn't like it at all. He's just, he cannot, he can't.
We'll have to have a little side dish of Parmesan for Paul.
And does this gentleman who has goats in Big Sur, does he bring the cheese to the farmer's market?
I think he does. I met him at the wedding, so I didn't know too much about him.
Yeah.
A very nice gentleman, and he also had bees and honey. And he did a goat cheese with honey in it.
Oh, that has to
And
be
it was
fabulous.
At the wedding. It was delicious.
Oh, my goodness.
Delicious. So I am looking for more bees. I want to get another hive going because I really, really miss my bees and things. They just pollinated a lot more things. My fruit trees had more fruit on them.
So you have more abundance when you have bees.
Yeah. Bees are very important.
Well, and that's one reason I don't like to trim my rosemary back so far, because where I live, the rosemary's been in bloom literally the entire year. And I don't know if people know this, but I read somewhere that the bees can see some colors, and their favorite color is blue. And that's what the color of the rosemary blossom is. So that and borage, you know, I leave some things for the little wild critters, especially when they're helping me
out.
Those
borage flowers are really tasty,
too.
Oh,
they taste so nutty.
They're nice on top of a salad.
Yeah, or you can mix them in melted butter with a little calendula.
Ooh.
Yeah, or honey. Mix it into your honey, and then it's just beautiful on the table.
I think the Romans used to make a tea out of it because it promoted courage.
It does. That's right. That is right. You are so smart. You're a wealth of knowledge. So what about water? You know, everyone's hearing about their Cal-Am bill going up, and you're talking about watering your garden, and you have a sizable garden.
You know what I have in the back of my barn is I have two big water troughs, and the gutters, this last rain last week, filled up both of my troughs.
No way.
I just finished one today on watering my tomatoes.
Yeah.
I want to get bigger tanks.
Yeah.
And because even when it's a heavy fog, we get water.
That's true.
Like about 6 inches in the bottom of those bins.
So you utilize water catchment.
Absolutely. It's wonderful. Rainwater is one of the most nutritious things for plants. Everything looks so perky after a good rain.
Someone told me that the reason that is because rainwater catches nitrogen. And that's one thing the plants definitely need, and they don't get it from hose water.
Well, there's so many chemicals in our water now from the hose. Our water used to be really, when I was a little kid, you could drink water out of the tap. It was sweet, sweet, cool water. But because they put so many chemicals now in it for whatever reason, it tastes funny.
Yes. Even the animals, I've noticed, prefer rainwater.
Yes.
When it's rained, my cat will go out of the house and drink out of a puddle of rainwater. And the chickens do, too.
Yeah, I have a couple of bowls in the front yard that I fill up for the turkeys and the deer.
Aww.
It looks like Disney outside. I feed everybody. And I'm sitting at my desk, and I look out, and there's bunnies, there's quail, there's pigeons, there's dove, there's deer.
So you're a modern-day Snow White.
Yeah, exactly. Come on, everybody's hungry. Come and eat.
How do you deal with the deer?
Now, this time of the year, they're pissing me off. But I went and bought them Omeline four-way mix. So they're eating my orange tree leaves.
Oh, no.
So I know they're eating things that they normally wouldn't eat.
Which means they're desperate.
Yeah. So I put a flake of hay out, and then I get a coffee can full of this four-way that I got at the feed store, and I put that on top. But they got to beat the turkeys there, because I've got like 30 turkey every
Wild
day come
turkey.
Through. Yeah.
Right. You're not harvesting those?
No.
Yeah. Okay.
I haven't got that hungry yet.
Yeah.
Rather have pheasants.
So you feed the deer so they don't feed off of your other plants.
Yeah. My backyard is pretty fenced in. And then my garden is behind the barn, so they would have to go through the horse corral before they even got to the garden.
Oh, that's a good strategy.
Yeah.
That's very good strategy. And how do you keep the chickens out of the garden?
They're on another
area.
Yeah, and they're all penned in.
We
have bobcats. I can't really let them out.
That's right. And mountain lions, I believe.
And mountain lions, coyote.
Yeah.
You name it, we've got it.
That's right. And so you haven't had any run-ins with those?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you have?
Oh, yeah. There was a bobcat just got... I had bought these new little chickens. They are French black Moran.
Yes.
They lay the dark, dark brown eggs.
Yes.
Well, I found some. Took me a long time to find them. I found them down in Santa Barbara. So I brought six home, and one of the little hens got her leg chewed off through the wire.
Oh my gosh, he got her, and she died.
But anytime I've had them out, because I used to let my chickens out on a regular basis, because they are good for fly control.
They are good for bug control.
Bug control. They'll go through your horse corrals and eat all the fly larvae.
The only thing is, you can't let them in the garden when
no,
the greens
are... No, they'll eat everything.
Yeah, just learn that. So, Michael, I would definitely want to have you back on again, because I can see the clock. We're running out of time. But our two favorite questions on this show are, what is your favorite book of all time?
Well, Angels and Demons was pretty high up there. Daniel Brown and Da Vinci Code. I liked Angels and Demons better than Da Vinci Code. Also, Water for Elephants was one of my most favorite books of all time.
Mm.
Wonderful ending.
What a journey.
Yeah, it was. It was. And as I was reading it, I felt like I was going through that journey with them.
Mm.
You know, it was just a well-written book and wonderful ending. Wonderful.
And what are you reading now?
Nothing.
You know, Dan Brown has a new book.
I know. I want to get that one. I read when I go visit friends in Hawaii and Maui.
Oh, that's your reading time.
Because I have downtime. I don't have to do anything. At home, there's always something to do.
Yes.
If I'm going to sit and read a book...
You're on vacation.
Yeah. And I love reading. When I go to Hawaii, I'll read 4 or 5 books a week.
Well, just keep in mind, and for those who are listening, we've got Dan Brown's newest book, Inferno, and it's also on CD. It's on, you know, books on CD. So for some people, the only time they get to read is when they're driving. I can kind of relate to that, even though I live pretty much in a bookstore. So come in and check out our audio section, Michael. You might see some things you could have in your ears while you're watering.
That would be great.
Yeah. It has been a tremendous joy to have you on this show. This is really, really, really what I thought it would be. I mean, you've shared a little bit of the past that most of us have not experienced, and maybe some have forgotten who did experience. And you're a shining example of what simple living really is.
Well, thank you.
It was
a pleasure to be here. I'm glad you asked me to be here with you.
Delighted to have you. And I want to let the listeners know we have a special treat tomorrow. We have Nancy Mellon, who is a local now. She is a psychotherapist, a counselor, and a storyteller. She will be at our bookstore tomorrow evening for a donation-only event in the Secret Garden, beginning at 5 o'clock, from 5 to 7 on Sunday, the 29th of September. And her talk, her, I guess with Nancy, it's more like a little workshop, is called Awaken Healing Storyteller Within. And she uses stories like medicine, like an alchemist would. And it's a very wonderful, wonderful skill to have. I'm so delighted that we'll have her there. And also, just to let folks know, next Saturday and Sunday is the Rota Fair, the Rota Crystal and Psychic Fair at the Monterey Fairgrounds. It'll be both days, 10 to 6. We will be there. And of course, Tracking Club happens the first Sunday of every month. That will be Sunday, October 6th, starting 8 a.m. You can find all this good information out on our Facebook page, Pilgrim's Way at Facebook. See us there, and I will see you next week here, KRXA 540 AM at Simple Life. Zabba-dab, 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 zabba-dab.